Well, that was a little loud. So after a bit of a break, Draft Policy Radio is back with a special episode all about Doctor Who. This is a show for folks who have a little bit of wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey to spend with us. So we usually talk comics with some hardcore fans, but we're doing something a bit different tonight. And want to see what two non-regular comic readers have to say about comics. And in this case, we're doing a Doctor Who-themed episode. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alana, and tonight we've got two guests, Amanda Mayer and Chris Reed. Amanda is a writer, director, and comedian, as well as a longtime Whovian. She can currently be seen performing with musical improv teams Goats and Orphan Alley around New York City. Chris is a long-time nerd, avid gamer, both digital and physical, and consumer of sci-fi and fantasy entertainment in various forms. He runs a solo law practice in Brooklyn, working largely with indie game developers and others in the game industry, helping them navigate various legal issues that crop up with their business. Welcome, both of you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Our pleasure.
And, Alana, how you doing? Haven't talked in quite a while. We're back.
I know, it's great. We're back. You know, we've had the idea for doing this episode for a while, actually even prior to talking with you guys, just sort of as an experiment, because one of the things that Brett and I are really obsessed with is thinking about different ways that people get into comics and how we broaden the comics audience. And one of the questions we've sort of had are like, you know, are comics that are in property, intellectual properties that people are big fans of, like, is that a draw for them to start reading those comics as well, or do those comics just get picked up by comic book readers who come across those properties and things like that? And, you know, Doctor Who is such a huge fan base internationally and growing in America, and I didn't really know that there were contemporary Doctor Who comics coming out until I started getting all these press releases from Titan, the publisher who does the books. And the Titan folks have been very generous in giving us review copies. Thank you, folks at Titan. So this seems like, especially since I know such hardcore Doctor Who fans, and I'm actually outside of that fandom myself, it seems like I've got an opportunity to see what people think about, you know, comics around an IP that they love and care about that they may not have seen otherwise, may not have cared about, you know, and what it makes them think about the genre, if they like reading them, and questions like that. So this has been a topic we've wanted to hit on for a while, and I want to thank you guys for being part of our social experiment.
I do enjoy being experimented on.
Professional guinea pigs, that's us.
I think, like, before we actually kind of dive in and talk about the comics, like, I think the best place to start is we'll go with you, Amanda, and then Chris, about your experience with, like, Doctor Who, you know, which Doctor you got into, which one you like the most, and kind of go from there.
Sure. So my parents watched Doctor Who when I was a kid, so it was something I was aware of, though I don't have a lot of, like, strong recollections as a kid. And then I was actually studying abroad in London when it relaunched, and it was the biggest deal. And so I heard about it that way when Christopher Eccleston came back as Nine. And then I saw them actually when I came back to America because I didn't have a TV when I was there. But I'd heard about it. And so I started watching with Christopher Eccleston, and I have been devoted ever since, and since jumping in with the reboot in, I guess, 05. I then went back and I've seen, you know, First Doctor and Second Doctor and Fourth Doctor. So I've... For the last decade, it's been a very large part of my life. Just big old nerd about it.
Wow, it really
nothing wrong with
been
that.
A decade. I just realized.
Yeah,
that.
We are very old.
It's been a decade, and there's already been four doctors.
Four
and a half.
Since I got into it. Yeah, yikes.
We'll go four and a half. We'll count the war doctor.
A time traveler.
This is true.
True, War Doctor, four and a half.
What about you, Chris? Like, when did you get into Who?
So I also watched some Doctor Who as a kid, but it was very sporadic and kind of random. And I think I knew enough to kind of know what Daleks were generally. And I think mostly it came from either when it was on television or whenever we'd go to rent movies, I would spend my entire time in the horror or science fiction section just looking at the covers of things and would randomly pick things out. So I'm sure I rented a couple of tapes when I was a kid, but I never watched in any coherent order or had really like a real sense of it. I was just sort of vaguely aware that it was this old British show. And then I didn't get into it right when it restarted. Actually, a very good friend of mine, Doug Miller, has been watching it forever and ever and ever, both like all the old stuff and sort of got into it when the new stuff came on and sort of told me it would be my sort of thing. But of course, me being me, I asked him questions for about 2.5 hours so that he could get me up to speed on the universe, because I felt like it wouldn't be right to just like leap right into it. but it turned out the new show is, you know, pretty well done for people to kind of drop right in and then to gradually become aware that there was all this backstory. And like Amanda Eisen, once I became obsessed with the new show, and I think it was around fourth season was just starting, so the last David Tennant season was just starting when I got in, but I went back and started from Eccleston, and then went back and sort of watched selected arcs from the various older Doctors with a little bit of curating from our friend Doug.
Fair enough. Alana, any experience with Who?
Yeah, I actually only began watching Doctor Who this year so I could participate more effectively in a game of Mafia that we were playing online against friends. So I have read a number of Wikipedia entries. I have seen approximately 4 episodes.
Which 4?
They were all with Eccleston.
Which 4.
Oh, yeah. in sequential, the first 4. I mean, the farting aliens, 4. You know.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm really not. I'm the outsider looking in upon your world now.
I'm more fascinated about
join
the mafia.
Join us, in here.
bigger on the inside.
Mafia is like a game that. Christ, how do you explain Mafia?
Well, I know
it's
werewolf.
A game. It's a werewolf. Yes,
oh,
thank
it's
you.
Yeah.
Werewolf. I'm more fascinated
with
the online and involving Doctor Who.
So that was really the thing that got me to watch any of it, and this was less than a year ago. I am not a Whoian of any stretch of the imagination. But Brett, on the other hand.
Yeah, so I remember watching really old episodes when I was a kid, not really being into it, and it was the show that would play either like really early on Saturdays and Sundays, and I would kind of catch episodes here and there, and I always thought it was like really cheesy, and wasn't big into it, and then my now wife forced me to sit down and watch Blink. So
good woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Good woman.
And she was like, if you're going to get sucked in, this is going to do it. So from there, I kind of started watching from, I guess, like most of the 11th on. Well, yeah, I would say all the 11th on, some of the 10th. And I maybe seen an episode or two with Eccleston. But yeah, so I'm still fairly new to Who, but yeah, it's been whatever, 3-4 years at this point now. 3 years. But yeah, so I mean, with all of you, is there like a favorite Doctor that you have?
Old or new? I feel like I have one of the sort of new wave, and then from the classic.
Yeah, that's like asking about your favorite Beatles album. There's not a wrong answer.
Yes,
and
there
you
is.
You also have to pick one
there
from at least
Beatles
one
answer.
Of 3 or 4 eras, like one each.
Oh, don't get me started.
For me, I feel like everyone, there's that saying in England, who is your doctor, which is like how people identify what generation you are, because you always love your first doctor, so I feel like everyone loves the one that they came in on, which for me is Eccleston, because that's where I jumped in. And then in the old ones, it's Patrick Troughton, the second doctor. Black and white, super good.
It's interesting. They do say you never forget your first doctor, which I guess is true. But I will say I think of the new doctors, it's probably Matt Smith, and of the old ones, it was David Tennant until Matt Smith came along and was even more. I liked him even more. But I think of the old doctors. Yeah, I like Troughton a lot as well, which isn't surprising because Matt Smith has sort of said
that. That's who Matt Smith models on, yeah.
Yeah, he went back and really connected with him and tried to model his physicality and everything on kind of that guy's take.
All right, I'll dive in. So Baker was the one I remember like growing up with, so I just feel like I have to go with Baker. I mean, just the everything, that's kind of what stands out in my mind. So it's more default with him. And then modern is actually a tough one. Probably Smith, though Capaldi has really grown on me.
Really?
Yes, I actually like Capaldi. And I'm sure
I like him too. We haven't had a lot on him yet, though. And it's hard to separate an actor from the writing. And sometimes I don't like the writing on a certain arc, but I can see the actor sort of doing better than the writing is.
I feel like, the eternal debate about the modern Doctor Who, though, because I feel like I felt the same way about Matt Smith. I loved Matt Smith. I love his Doctor. I feel like he got some real crummy storylines by the end, and I feel like that's happening sort of again with Capaldi. I like him, and that first episode, I was like, I saw it on the big screen where they did like this big premiere event at the Ziegfeld Theater, and it was amazing. And it was bigger than life, and I loved it. And then as the season went on, I was just so disappointed in the storyline. So I see what you mean. He's a great doctor, but I do feel like you get into this place of, like, what are you judging it by, the quality of the episodes or just the person? And that gets to be a difficult proposition.
Yeah, I'm doing it with the person. In his case, like, the acting and how he portrays the character, I actually think he transcends the writing. Like, he's much better than what they're giving him. So the fact that he's actually able to do well with fairly inconsistent, we'll say, writing says everything. Like, he himself is fantastic. The writing is crap, generally.
Yeah, he's gotten some real crummy ones.
Yeah, so, I really like. I mean, the one that I would love to see, I want more War Doctor. I love to see more War Doctor. But that's a whole part of the
show.
He
was great.
Well, that was amazing.
Yeah, I think what happened is Moffat poured all of his remaining good ideas into the 50th anniversary, and now it's just... but he got the 50th right, I thought. I really enjoyed that whole thing.
I really enjoyed it. Although it was one of those ones where you watch it and you're so tied up and you're like, this is amazing. And then 2 days later, you're like, hang on, did that hang together?
I think it did.
No?
I rewatched it a couple months later, and I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I rewatched it a few times. I still enjoy it. I don't think, like, there are moments where I'm like, this doesn't super make sense, but it's so enjoyable.
True, but...
you almost, your brain tells, your heart tells your brain to shut up.
Oh, yeah. Well, Doctor Who's always been a little bit bigger on the emotional truth than the literal truth.
Yeah.
Which I think any good fiction does. And then when sci-fi gets a little bit too into its own tech babble, it tends to lose the point of fiction and narrative, which is, you know, characters and what's happening to them and why it matters, not how the phaser works.
Yeah, I feel like those are some of the challenges I saw actually reading the comics. I don't know
Agreed.
If you want to jump ahead about that. But maybe we should just ask Chris, which of the we're looking at right now, for folks who don't know, Titan Comics is publishing a lot of Doctor Who comics with different doctors in them. So, like, name your favorite doctor. They probably have a series of them, probably. At least that's true for all the new Who doctors, right? Brett, you did research. What's the story?
So, Titan Comics would be very smart in it. The first series they came out was the 11th Doctor. And then they followed up with the 10th Doctor and 12th Doctor. And starting April 1st, they'll have the 9th Doctor. which I heard a gasp on that one.
I'm sorry, that was an audible gasp in my phone. I'm very excited to hear they'll be Night Doctor. I will read those.
So, yeah, so Night Doctor comes out April 1st. The series is done by various people. The Night Doctor will actually be written by someone who wrote, I think, like, the guide to Doctor Who. I'm going to probably butcher the first name, Kevin Scott. So well-known Whovian or someone that's really into it, and the other creators is are fans. Before Titan Comics, IDW Publishing had a line of, I think it's IDW, had a line of Doctor Who comics that they lost the license of, and kind of read them here and there. But basically it's four different comics that are all not really tied together, follow a different doctor, so you can pick up and enjoy your favorite doctor or read them all. Yes. Yeah, that's the short of it.
Well, they don't have to go in order. That's a time-honored Doctor Who tradition, jumping around.
Well, so when they started, I believe, like, the 12th was just starting. So it wasn't quite there yet. So I think that's why they kind of started with the 11th. But,
right.
You know, I think that I'm pretty sure the 12th was the second one, and then 10th after that. And now 9th. And we'll see what else. I fully expect them to do stuff with the earlier doctors
sure.
down the road. It'd be smart.
And there have been Doctor Who comics going back a long, long time with the various publishers and things like that. I remember one of my favorite fantasy art books from the 70s, i.e. older than me, had a couple of pages of Doctor Who art in it. Gosh, I wish I remembered who the artist was. It was really outstanding, and I saw it before I was really aware of Doctor Who, you know, because it was like a fantasy art book I had growing up, and so they definitely
yeah.
had some good artists working on them.
Well, the idea
yeah,
of like, the way that they're doing it, it reminds me of what Alana said at the very beginning of this podcast about, like, sort of keying people, is this a good way to get people into IP that they already love? And one of the both great but also frustrating things about Doctor Who is you get attached to a doctor, and then he goes away. And we don't all love all the same doctors the same, but this is a nice way to, if you love 11 and you just can't get behind 12, good news. There you can stay with him forever in book form, which I think is amazing.
Well, and also there's precedent for that. I mean, this is what's so great about Doctor Who. More so, I don't want to overuse the word unique, but I do want to say that it's almost unique as far as it is unique among sort of fictional universes. It has been written for and developed for such a long time, over so many generations, that you have a long tradition of radio dramas as well, which are a thing that I think the UK does a lot more in general than the US, and specifically with Doctor Who. So even the actors, you can get a lot of the actors have been doctors longer in radio dramas than they ever were on the screen. And in fact, a number if you watched the excellent 8-minute lead-in to the 50th anniversary, he was in a terrible, terrible made-for-TV movie in the mid-90s where they tried to relaunch it and got so scarred that they had to wait another decade, and it was terrible, but he was great. Again, that same theme of good, you know, good actor, good doctor, bad writing. But he's actually in some ways been I think is the longest running doctor if you count all the audio dramas he's done. And so I think the comics kind of as an extension of that, of letting you get more stories with your favorite doctor or just more content in the universe.
It's a great point. I'm about to post some old Who art that's really stunning. But do you guys, I mean, I would just sort of say, like, top level review, did you guys enjoy reading these comics? What were the ones that you enjoyed reading in here?
Amanda, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. I did. It's funny. So I read the 11, the 10th Doctor, all of them, and then the first one of 11. And I liked the first one, 11, so much more than I enjoyed the ones from 10, which surprised me. I feel like, and it might be just the way that the 10th Doctor was, that in book form, the charm doesn't come, it came off a little bit forced because he was kind of quippy and super talk fast. And what Alana was saying about how, you know, when it gets too, I think it was either Alana or Chris who said, when it gets too much into the technology of it, you sort of lose it, but it's not as appealing. They do that more in the 10th Doctor comic than they do in the 11th. But it, as a general rule, like at first, when I opened them up, I just sort of did have this sort of warm and fuzzies of, oh, these are the people that I have loved for years. And they recreate it so well. Like I could almost, I could hear the inflection, I could hear the voices, and it was great.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I often feel like, you know, seeing a, I mean, it's often when it goes the other way, right? When it's a book made into a movie or a show, and you think you don't want people to watch the show first, because if they do, then they won't be able to read the book without hearing, you know, hearing the actors' voices, and then maybe they might have imagined something else, and that's taken, you know, taken something out of it. But these, you know, the Doctors really are created by the actors that give them life. So it was, I think going this direction, it works for me, because when I was, you know, I read the 11th Doctor arc, and yeah, I could hear Matt Smith, you know, it's just text, right? But I could hear the inflection and the timing of it and exactly the way his voice goes up and down. And because it's clear that the people writing it were trying to capture sort of the essential Matt Smith style 11th Doctor. And I appreciated that. At first, I was a little worried. I was a little worried that it would be too, well, this gets into a bigger thing about adapting between medium or media. But I think I was worried that it would be too, they'd try to be too faithful to it. So, like, my example would be, like, the first Harry Potter movie, right, which was a super accurate rendering of the first book and incredibly soulless, right? Just, like, scene for scene. Like, it's a very competent, this is what happened in the first book. But it's like, it's not a great movie, because movies do a different thing than books do, and comics do a different thing than television shows do. And what you need, what I think a successful adaptation captures the soul of it, but plays to the strengths of the medium. And I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I only read the 11th arc, and so I enjoyed it. I thought it got that right. I can't speak to sort of whether the balance is different with different writers in the other arcs.
So I that would be an interesting thing. The one thing I found reading all of them is, while I was reading it, all the characters, I heard their voices in my head and how they would deliver it. So I kind of kept on going back and forth, was like, is it the writing that's really solid in catching like those inflections and kind of their mannerisms as well as you can do in like a comic form, or is it me projecting those onto the comic and reading it how I would think they would perform it? And to this point, I still don't quite know which is which.
I'm not the person to answer that, since I don't really know their voices that well. it's hard for me to distinguish between the writer of the comic and the voice of the Doctor, right? That's my challenge. So I read a bit of each of the three Doctors we covered. I probably enjoyed the 10th Doctor stuff the most, question mark, at least the very beginning of the run. And that's because I like Al Ewing, the comic book writer. I felt that, I don't know, so the guy who wrote those particular ones, he writes a number of comics for Marvel, including one that I read, which is called Loki, Agent of Asgard, like Loki from, as in Thor's brother. And it's been a fun series. Brett, do you read Loki? I don't remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
You do. I felt like it was identifiably like, oh, this is by the same guy who writes the Loki comic. Like, it felt like it was in his voice, and I could actually hear some similarities in some ways between, like, Loki trying to be a good guy, sort of, as he is in the series, and I'm sorry, not the 10th Doctor. I'm sorry, the 11th Doctor. And what he's writing about in that book. So I don't know if it's Matt Smith's voice, but it's Al Ewing's voice, and it felt very playful and fanciful, and I enjoyed it.
Which I can, so since I read Loki, I can actually say a little bit to that. Interesting enough, I would say that Doctor and Loki are very similar in personality, so like Al Ewing writing both of them is not a shock. Like his voice in Loki is, and what he set up with that is very perfect for the 11th Doctor. And thinking of it, like now that you've said it, like if someone said, hey, what other comics might I read that I might be interested in and I'm really into the 11th Doctor, I might suggest Loki and say,
cool.
You know, this is a character you might dig. Whether or not that's accurate,
I have the whole, yeah, and I have the whole run, and I'm happy to loan it to you.
I would like to borrow that.
Yeah, I might pick you up on that,
this
too.
I have... This is my mission, yes.
Yeah, I did enjoy Loki quite a bit in the in the various recent Marvel movies and in actual Norse mythology. So I have every reason to believe I'd like him in the comics.
And I would think you might be able to see, like, in the movies how he might have that very similar swagger to a doctor.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a little bit more of the, like, kind of bad guy, but it's,
right,
but it's
right.
A similar, like,
evil?
I was going to say, if he's anybody, he might be nine. The sort
true,
of
yeah.
I am cool and dangerous. He has sort of an Eccleston vibe to him.
I will
yeah,
go with not as angry.
True. But in the comic, in that comic, because of various story things that have happened within the Marvel Universe, the current Loki in the Marvel comics is not evil. He's trying to not be evil, and so it actually is consistent with that, in fact. So that was something that I really felt. And the Doctor's voices each felt very different to me, reading them in these comics, but again, I couldn't just say how faithful it was to the acting. It felt like Capaldi, like I could imagine him, and, you know, he's like this older, supposed to be slightly grouchier doctor, right? And I could hear that in how it was written, absolutely. I also thought that the art on that one was probably better than the art on some of the other books, although the beginning of the art for the David Tennant book that takes place in my neighborhood, Sunset Park, was remarkably accurate. I do just want to give a shout out, actually. Who was working on that one with hold on, I'm gonna pull this up. Nick Abandes and Ilona Casagrande. They set their story with the David Tennant Doctor in my neighborhood where I live, and they drew my neighborhood very accurately. So that is, like, there's restaurants that I'm like, oh, yeah, I know which specific restaurant that is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it's that really big Mexican restaurant that has a room you can rent in the back. Like, that's her family's Mexican restaurant. So that was kind of interesting, like, to see that much care and specificity in the place and setting that was used there. And actually, the line work on that particular artist, at least in the early part of that series, is quite good, too. That was probably my favorite, like, little bit of, like, shorter run. But overall, I like Al Ewing's the best. But I think that, is this character Gabby? Was she new? Was she invented for the comics?
She.
Which character?
Gabby. So
Gabby,
this is in the 10th Doctor.
She's in New York.
Oh,
she's
okay.
New. She's not in the show.
Right. She's American. And, like, they don't have American companions, right? So.
No,
they do in the old Doctor, actually.
Which one was American in the old one?
Someone with five. Tegan, maybe?
I think they're, like, Australian. It's, like, something like...
Oh, no, Tegan's
like,
Australian. I feel like there was at least one... No, you're
Tegan
right.
Tegan and
Adderick
is British. But they're, like,
oh, you're
from,
right,
like,
you're
everywhere.
Right.
Like, we have Zoe, who's an
right.
alien.
Tegan was annoying, so
doctor.
I assumed she was American. That's how they
were. I think she was trying to, like, dumb down her accent, and it just came off as, like, you are the worst. Someone murder you.
So,
that's how it is,
anyway,
a Doctor Who.
But she was brand new. She was brand new.
Oh, okay. So I was happy to see that they were trying to diversify, you know, the lead cast in there. I'm not just because she was American, because, like, who cares about that, but that she was a Mexican-American person, I thought was a nice There was a little bit of like a popular tropes about like stories that people frequently tell about immigrant families that were in there that I was sort of like, yeah, everybody says X, Y, and Z. I know plenty of Mexican-American families through my job, although where that's not the case. And it would be nice to sometimes like see it not just have this one stereotype where everybody's parents
yeah.
want them to run the family business and don't want them to go to art school. That's like the most common story. And it's not to say it's not a real story, but it's like kind of told a lot. But I was glad to see, you know, that when they had the opportunity to invent additional characters for the book, they were diversifying that cast of people.
I found her sort of frustrating. I liked, again, like, I thought it was cool to have an American. I thought it was not only cool, but very smart to set it in Sunset Park. Like, I thought that they did a lot of really good things on the baseline with that, but I felt like that character was a big example of telling me and not showing me. They're like, she is an artist. Took a real long time before I saw her, like, do any art. Which for a comic book, I was like, that I would think that would come up. It's such a visual medium. I was sort of surprised. And I felt like, and this is a problem that I've had with companions on the show, where people are telling you somebody is so brave and so smart and so great, but they're never showing you any evidence of them being smart or brave or great. And eventually she got there, but I just thought she was, the character was sort of, kind of just like a trope and not like a person. And then, so she sort of has like two arcs in that season. And in the second half where she like actually goes away with him and it's sort of told from her perspective, they did a visual thing that I'm curious for people who read comic books more than I do. They had sort of her like writing letters to her friend, which I thought would have been cool, but they gave her this, I'm an artist handwriting. And I was like, I can't read this. I had no idea what every fourth word said. Did you have any trouble reading it, or are my eyes dumb? Which is totally possible.
I had to hold my computer screen much closer to my face, but I was able to read it.
Okay,
I had to make it
super big.
And you're right, the comic really should take advantage of that, yeah.
So I sometimes have, I know what you're talking about. I had a little bit of issues reading it, and the thing that I've always wondered is the fact that a digital comic, of how much that impacts it, because I know, and having looked at it, that some lettering in like physical print comics don't turn out quite as well in the digital form, so I always give like a little bit of leeway when it comes to that.
Sure.
I buy
that, you know, I read tons of comics, and I would know that sort of thing. That's the one thing that hasn't translated well in digital comics is the lettering for some reason.
Wait, is this question, are these issues digital only, or are these just like digital advanced copies of what will be physical?
Just advanced copies we have.
Advanced copies,
Yeah. Right, but there are
the
physical.
Publishers, physical books are out. They're probably in trade paperback even by now, I would imagine.
I believe the first trade that would collect, I want to say the first five issues of each is out for the, I want to say 11th and 10th Doctor, maybe the 12th as well. But yeah, trades are out for at least two out of three that are out.
Oh, great.
Cool. So yeah, I know reading these things online is really not optimal. For us as reviewers, that's how we're able to review stuff, because we can't afford to buy everything we need to review. But it's true. Like,
I've read the comic book habit was almost
friends.
As bad as a crack habit, like in terms of money. Like, that just must be just money after money after money.
Have you seen my living room table?
it's
pretty treacherous.
You guys have an entire room in your house that is just comic books, basically. And like
and a computer
in the corner.
Storage space.
Sorry, as the Alice character who was in the Michael Smith book, is she new? Is she just from the comics?
She's also new. As is the alternate reality David Bowie character.
So yes, can we talk about that? What did you guys think of? Oh, I I loved Alice. I actually don't really like Alternate Reality David Bowie, but I liked what he was trying to go for. But what did you guys think of that?
I thought she was great. I mean, going on your theme of sort of diversifying, not just sort of what you typically think of, like, there are people of different races. It's diversity. We win. We can all go home now. Yes, she was, from like an African family immigrated to British or to British, to the UK. But I thought what was, in Doctor Who terms, what was more notable is that, and there was actually an inconsistency in between two comics, continuity error, they mentioned at one point that she was in her 40s, right? So that alone, and I hate to say it, but like that was an amazing thing for them to have done, because one of the knocks on New Who, and this was very much not the case at all in old Doctor Who for various reasons, but they have people from all sorts of weird backgrounds, guys and girls, multiple companions at different times, you know. But in the new Doctor Who, there's basically been sort of attractive or dreamy doctors in one way or another, and they've done a romance thing, and it's always been a young woman, and there's always been some romantic tension, right? Which kind of made sense with Nine into David Tennant with Rose. That arc kind of actually felt natural. But
it was
everything
the first
after
one,
that,
too, and we weren't all tired of it yet.
Right, and they took their time, and it made sense, and there was, it gets tired really, really quickly. It's a crutch that leads to uninteresting stories. It's lazy. I mean, there's all sorts of problems with it that we don't need to get into, but it was very refreshing to have kind of a Donna Noble type, no-nonsense character who wasn't just sort of like, I'm no-nonsense and sassy, but secretly I love you. Like, no, it was just like, I in no way is this even remotely part of our relationship. I found that very refreshing. I thought she was a good, a really good character. And they got a good banter going. It's nice to see different companions. And one interesting thing, actually, is that, again, because this is such a, it's something that Doctor Who can do, because the conceit is this Time Lord has lived, from his perspective at this point, over 1,000 years, right? And we're meant to think, and they do this in the show a little bit, we're meant to think that there are dozens of adventures that go on in between episodes of the show, right? And presumably he can have whole stretches of time with other people in between when he sees Amy and Rory. In fact, presumably that's what happened, because in the first issue of this, they set the timing of it, and it's kind of meant to be after season, I think just after season 5, which is the first Amy and Rory season. And I like that. I like that you get this idea that there's all sorts of stuff that's always happening in the cracks in between that, you know, we don't necessarily have to always do referencing on the show.
One of the things I liked about that same character, Chris, was that, like, not only was she older, that, correct me if I'm wrong, because you might have a better accurate memory of this, but usually we get these companions who, like, their life before the Doctor is boring. Like, they're just going about their day, they're a little smarter than everybody else, but, like, their lives are just missing something. And this one was, like, in the depths of grief. And that was very different. That was, like, a different way to approach it, the idea of, like, this person is sort of sought out for the fact that they're in an extreme emotional state, which was so different than what we've seen in the last, like, 5 or 6 companions, which I thought was really cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in some ways, it's still the same theme, right? And they've made this the meta theme of the Doctor, at least in New Doctor Who, which is, like, running away, right? Because that's what the Doctor is. The whole thing is that the Doctor is this person who, from an august race of time travelers who are sort of fancy themselves the most sophisticated in all of the history of the universe, and he sort of breaks the rules and runs away and doesn't want all that, and his whole life is that. So he, you know, all his companions in one way or another are running away from something, but it was nice that it wasn't like running away from boring normal life. Rather, it was like running from something that actually matters, tangible grief. Because, like, in the real world, if you're bored, like, I don't know, only boring people are bored. Like, you can get up and do something.
But this, yeah, I agree with Amanda that this is, it was a much more interesting angle on why someone would want to hop in a time machine for and run around.
And I think that he's talking about some interesting stuff regarding the power of corporations, you know, as that series continues moving. I didn't have a chance to read it all, but it looks like that is a continuing theme throughout the arc.
Oh, the Serview Inc.? Actually, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Having read the all six of those, it seemed like they were going somewhere. I guess, Brett, you read everything, right?
A good chunk of it. And it was also a long time ago, so right now I'm trying to put everything together as to what the hell I read.
I'm just curious, are there going to be additional series that kind of follow on, or is each of these meant to be like a finished, complete arc that won't have anything after it? Because it did feel sort of like what the main thrust that they had was like diverted. Like the last issue was really cool, but it was almost like a standalone that wasn't tied into, I don't know, what they'd been doing before. But then again, I may have missed something that, I don't know, I was expecting more along the lines of that the corporation thing that you were talking about a lot. It was, they did a lot with it, but then it didn't seem to be resolved. And then there was like the standalone at the last issue, so I'm just curious.
I'm assuming there will be more tie-ins down the road. I'm not positive as far as like storyline.
Gotcha.
But my gut says that it will be like contained arcs, and then there will be an overarching story that if you read all the arcs, you'll kind of pick up on.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is similar
to
Who. I mean, if you read the main story, you know, if you watch the main show, you can really watch individual episodes, but if you watch the entire season, there's a much greater story that for you to pick up on.
Right.
Oh, no wonder this Doctor Who art is so good. It's by Dave Gibbons. I do, not in the current series, I'm looking at the old Who art that I sent around on Twitter, but I do want to bring up a couple just points of criticism I had reading these pieces in general. There are whole stretches, usually in the middle of the different of the series, that I were just so full of babble, and it probably didn't feel that way to people who like are from inside the Who fandom, but to me, it was like impenetrable babble, like sci-fi babble. I like actually ended up skimming some of the later Matt Smith books just to see what was up with David Bowie, because I couldn't keep dealing with like the tech babble. I just couldn't keep track of it. And I read comics, constantly, but
that's
is not my universe.
That's interesting to me, because this may be a function of you not having watched some of the show, because there's one of the things that I actually like about Doctor Who, especially in the new Doctor Who, is that in contrast to something like Star Trek, which is kind of like, and I love Star Trek too, for different reasons, but in contrast to something like Star Trek, which is notorious for quite literally in the scripts, they have little brackets that just say tech. And then they fill it in with various words later on when they do the final draft. Doctor Who, as I think Moffat put it, when people were saying, oh, this didn't make sense, or there was this continuity error, there were blah, 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 and he said, look, it's a show about traveling through time in a box. and so there's occasionally they do it very well with some economy of words where he'll effectively say it's really complicated, you wouldn't understand, whenever there's something that's sort of like, wait, why did this whatever, and instead of just like laboriously explaining it, they'll sort of give a half explanation that gives you the kind of the gist. And give this sense that, you know, traveling through time in a box that's bigger on the inside is so ridiculously complex that the only way to ever talk about it is to, like, start explaining it and then resort to a metaphor. And I kind of like that it's always done as kind of a, you know, it works, but we can't really explain why. It's time travel. It's complicated.
It never feels like a cop-out to me, anyway. I know not everyone necessarily agrees with me. But so I like that. So it may be that you saw some of him being just silly and thought you were supposed to know what it all meant. And if you read or if you see enough Doctor Who, you'll realize that, like, no, that he just says something every time.
Actually, I don't think I was quite explaining what I meant well. I totally know what you're talking about, and I do think that that's done well. I'm not so much talking about technical explanations of things. I'm talking about, like, it's world-building stuff that I'm unfamiliar with. Like, there seemed to be, like, when he was meeting with the different, like, the woman with, like, the red hair that was, like, in a super-duper beehive, and they were talking about, like, who was controlling which planet. It was actually more world-building stuff than techno stuff. And I don't know if it's some world stuff that exists elsewhere or if it's some world stuff that just existed there, but I got lost on some of the world-building details.
No, it just, that just exists there.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the 10th one, I had a somewhat similar reaction at a few different spots. And it was really specific stuff, and it was like, I think it helps. I think my reaction wasn't as strong in part because of what we were talking about earlier with knowing their voices, because I could exactly hear the way that David Tennant would say these sort of, unless it's not like this, which there is, like these very specific pattery things when he's talking about something that's happening in front of him. And then it reminds him of a thing that happens on a world that he's been to one time. And then he very quickly says 9 sentences about it. And you're like, that is not relevant. But it's charming if you can hear it in the voice. And I think devoid of the voice, it might just be like, why are you talking about this? But even if you have that in your head, there were moments where I think that's one of the aspects of the show that doesn't, A, that doesn't read as well in comic form. That's like one of the few things that for me had a difficult time translating. And also, it may also be down to the writing where I think in certain situations, it was an attempt to really recreate that voice, and it was done in an almost too heavy-handed way of like, this is how David Tennant talks in the show. Let's do it a bunch of times. And it just got to a point where I was like, I get it. Just go back to the plot and tell me what these monsters are.
Right. Yeah, I agree, actually, exactly what you're saying about them really wanting to recreate the voice. And I think we touched on that earlier, right? They're very keen to make sure that if they've got this precious charge, you know, which is to write for a beloved doctor, that they do, you know, they get the personality right. And there is this tendency to maybe overdo it. But I also think you're right that those little asides where they say, which reminds me, when I was on, you know, planet whatever, they're lovely, they've got space beaches. And he sort of does a thing, which is definitely part of both David Tennant and Matt Smith's doctors especially, but I think just in New Who in general. It just occurred to me that, yes, that scans better in the show, when you're not supposed to think, wait, did I miss something? It's meant to be this kind of flavor that gives you the sense that he really is 1,000 years old and is constantly going everywhere. But I think one of the problems, it doesn't work in a comic, may be that for comic book readers, especially people who've read a lot of sort of superhero, you know, the main superhero properties, there is just an enormous pile of continuity, right? Like if you read, like a Spider-Man comic from now, there will be references left and right to things that happened 40 years ago, right? And people who are really into it will love finding those little things and seeing that it's a reference to this random plot line from a spinoff in like 92. And so I think it's possible that if you read a lot of comics, you're trained to think that all of those things are supposed to be really important and that there's a Wikipedia hole for each one. And so they could be more distracting in comic form if that's what you're used to.
Brooke, did you find that there was much that we like that was narratively like less engaging within any of the books, or any particular critiques on the writing? Or
I really liked it. I think just the stories weren't quite as solid as I was looking for. I think that's my biggest critique. Like the depiction of the doctors themselves were good. I like the new companions, or I like how. The existing companions were or companion was Oswald was kind of depicted. The story itself kind of like I shrugged my shoulders a bit. Like they do a lot on the show and they do a lot of crazy stuff on the show, but here you have a comic where you literally can do anything and everything. And it almost felt like that wasn't taken advantage of, especially considering it's the Doctor and you can, you know, go anywhere, do anything, literally in time and space. So I, you know, hopefully that's more down the road. We'll get more of that. You know, I overall really, really like it. Like, I'd rather watch the show than the comics. And I think that's probably my next question for the both of you, would be like your thought of, you know, are the comics good for someone who is a fan of the show? You know, would you maybe suggest one for the other? Like, as fans of the TV show, really, like, to you, how is the comic as an adaptation and attempting to, like, get a different audience?
Chris, you want to go first?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
Were you asking me to talk? Sorry, there's
I was literally like,
in and out
go
sometimes,
ahead, bro.
Sorry, there's a slight delay, so I sometimes we talk over each other. I think that these are, the one that I read, I would definitely recommend to people who are already a fan of the show, especially if it's for a doctor that they really like. I found it really entertaining. It felt like Doctor Who to me. And I'm always happy to get more Doctor Who. And to be honest, it was really nice to read a story that wasn't by Moffat or under his care. it's horrible to say because I used to be the biggest fan of Moffat stuff. But
no.
That's an aside. To answer your question, I would definitely recommend it to people who are already Doctor Who fans. Whether it goes the other way as well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that if you're a comic fan and you happen to pick this up because, you know, someone has it and you read it, I don't know that it may not read as well if you're not already familiar, not necessarily with the lore of Doctor Who, but with tone and the kind of pacing and just sort of how the unspoken logic and illogic of it. It's harder to follow, I think, in to kind of go the other way. That would be my guess. But I think that people who are already fans of Doctor Who will like the comics.
Yeah, I agree with most of what Chris said. And I think especially so, you know, I don't think either of you had this situation, but this past season, Doctor Who for me got very frustrating. And I found myself, like, not excited to watch it. Like, I wasn't looking forward to the Christmas special. I wasn't looking forward. Like, about halfway through, I was just kind of like, oh, God. And which I hate because I love this show for so many years so hard. I feel like for fans who are experiencing that, I would 100% recommend this as an alternative or a supplemental because it was – I felt that same sort of excitement when reading it that I would feel when I knew a new episode was coming out when it was a doctor I loved or a companion I loved. So for fans of the show, I think it is phenomenal. I do agree with Chris. I think that it's assumes a lot of knowledge, even though each individual doctor starts off, well, I guess except for 12, with a brand new companion for whom things need to be explained, which I think is exactly why they do it that way, why you have to have the it's bigger on the inside conversation. And then the second one, at least certainly with Gabby, was her like writing a letter to her friend explaining things. Even with that being said, I do imagine it would be difficult to kind of like get up to speed if you were completely unfamiliar in every way with Doctor Who. I think that it does assume a lot. But if I had a friend who was like, oh, I really like such and such a show about time travel, or specifically like comics and sci-fi novels about time travel, I would recommend it for them even if they don't watch the show. I think that it could fill a place for people like that too.
Oh. I can say that for me as a non-Whovian,
I would still, I still would prefer to read Al Ewing on Loki, Agent of Asgard, and then the new Silver Surfer book that Dan Slott is writing is very much a Doctor Who premise, to the point where when they announced it, everybody was like, oh, that's so smart that Marvel is going to try to do its own kind of version of Doctor Who, because Silver Surfer is traveling across the galaxy on a silver surfboard, learning about humanity with his human partner, Dawn. Dawn being a human, who's also a female and young and attractive. and there may or may not be tension. I don't know. I found that the Silver Surfer comic didn't feel as Doctor Who as I thought it would be. I mean, like I said, I've only seen 4 episodes of Doctor Who, but it didn't feel like Doctor Who derived, but I did feel like, oh, if somebody liked the premise of Doctor Who, they might be interested in this comic. But to me, as like a non-Who watcher, I don't think I would continue to read Doctor Who comics.
Well, here's the flip side on that. Would, after reading that comic, would you be more inclined to check out the television series?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm moderately interested in the series anyway. You know what I mean? I would still watch it anyway. It's just like not at the top of my
If only,
you know,
so your friends Amanda and
like,
Chris will,
well,
shut up about
sharks
it.
Sharks are going to devour me. I guess I'll watch it.
No, it's not that. No, it's a show I'm interested in. It's just not at the top of my list of things I need to watch. You know, I don't know if this has changed my opinion or level of interest around watching Doctor Who stuff. I would still describe myself as being moderately interested in in watching Doctor Who. So
fair enough.
Now,
so
Amanda, as someone who has not read a ton of comics, it sounded like you might be interested in reading some additional comics that share similarities to the Doctor Who comics that you have just read.
I find it helpful. I've read like 2 comic series ever, one I loved, one I didn't, and so reading another that I enjoyed was great to sort of, because every so often when you read one you don't like, you're like, oh, maybe I just don't have a comic book reading brain and eye parts, but this makes me think that maybe I do. Though I did have, I don't know if you had this experience, Alana, but the last issue in the David Tennant run, the most recent one, which brings in the Angels arc, I did find sort of difficult to follow, like scanning-wise, which very well could have been because I was reading it digitally. But some of the paneling I found a little bit hard to follow.
Yeah, physical isn't going to change that. That's, I think, in general, like, out of everything I hear in comics, that's the biggest complaint for people who aren't regularly like that. And that's part of the artist's job, is to get that flow going. But I've, out of the non-comic readers that I've talked to quite often, like, that's usually the top issue that they have, is following the flow of the story. So, interesting question, though. How, if you could make suggestions to Titan Comics, how would you suggest that they get the comic in front of Doctor Who fans to get them to check it out? This is a question that we've talked about quite often, of how do you basically market comics to irregular non-comic readers who might be interested in that subject?
That is a hard one. I mean, I think just sort of existing in the world that we are so rabidly and obsessively in love with goes a very long way. But one of the things that I thought worked really well in the David Tennant run was where it was situated, because they had it fitting in at the end of Donna's run, and they had like references to the Song of the Ood, and at one point Gabby says, my mother always used to say, no song lasts forever, and these sort of like, there are these hooky things in Doctor Who, and because it's a show that at once is obsessed with continuity, and at the same time this continuity can kind of go screw itself because it's a time travel show. I think the more they can sort of play with it and sort of say, like, I guarantee you, if they came out with the Doctor and River finally do Jim the Fish comic run, everybody would read it, because there are these things that we're told about that we never get to see on the show, and they're the things that people want to see, or characters that we think are gone, but we don't really know what happened to them, and maybe they're still out there. If they, the more they tap into these sort of like sideways of Doctor Who that have been referenced but never shown to us, the more people will read them, because then you are the know-it-all who gets to know what happened.
Yeah, were you asking also sort of in a very practical level, what is the best way for these to be advertised or marketed to Who fans, just so that they're aware of their existence?
Yeah, that's true. The perfect example of, you referenced that you've seen the Marvel movies. The Marvel movies at no point actually advertise Marvel comics. Like, there's no, hey, go to this URL to check out, like, a comic or find your local store. Like, they just don't do that for some reason.
So the question was, would that work for you? Presumably, I'm actually a uniquely bad person to ask this to, because I not only hate being advertised to, I actively do everything I can to avoid. So basically any information about things, properties that I like, I go out and affirmatively seek. So I just find a fan site or like a news site for various things. Like, chances are I'm going to read about it on IO9. Like, if they want Doctor Who fans,
yeah.
Call up the editor of IO9 and have them write about it. that's the way they can get it in front of people. Because I do think that there's, like, people who are into, like, nerds are pretty good at finding information, because that's, as it says in the, as they say in the 11th Doctor comic arc, books and clever usually goes together. I think that the kind of people who tend to be hardcore fans, or I don't want to use the term hardcore, but, like, big fans who are willing to consume more of the universe than just, like, oh, I DVR it when it's on, they probably read about it, right? But they're probably the kind of people who go out and actively seek information. So figure out what the main channels for Doctor Who news are, you know, the big blogs that talk about it, in the kind of places that, like, sci-fi nerds go, and, they should have that stuff reviewed as part of the universe, because there's definitely a Doctor Who tag on IO9. I just bring that up because that's the blog I read. But I think that's the best way, rather than, like, it's not like a blanket advertising kind of thing, because it's much more like Doctor Who, it's kind of like, it's one of those word of mouth things, right? People say, oh my God, you have to get into this weird British show. Wait, I know it's going to be strange. Just watch one more episode. Trust me. Ah, there you go, right? Like, that's how it goes every time. Everyone's like, I don't know. And then they watch two more episodes and they're hooked, and then they're upset. And so it's like, it's not people who are going to, like, just see an ad on the subway or something, right? It's people who are going to be looking for information about this and discover that there's more, there's even more. So I think that's probably the way to do it. If they want to get people into more of the stuff.
It's interesting, because, like, the reason I ask, and there's actually a specific reason, is because every episode of Doctor Who I've ever watched, I've noticed they always have an ad for the Doctor Who toys and I can't think of a company that does it, but every episode they've got it. And so I've always wondered, I myself see that, and I was like, oh, cool, they've got a remote control canine or remote control Dalek. Like, that's, I didn't know that existed. And it's the same ad for, like, three seasons at this point, and I always forget these things exist. So I've always wondered, like, if you were maybe to do the same for the comic series, like, would it work? Like, would that actually be smart and a good way to go?
I think so. I mean, if they're already placing a little ad at the end, certainly that, yeah, I think that definitely makes sense, right? Like, on the actual, as a bumper to the actual show, definitely. Because they clearly know they have a merchandising thing, right? Like, the show took a significant turn coinciding with Matt Smith and when Moffat took over. And I don't think it was just like Moffat came in and was like, it's toys time. But, like, I think, because I'm not sure that's really his role anyway, but there was an uptick in budget. There was a realization that it had a huge fan base in the United States, and they really
sort of upped their game in terms of trying to make it a larger and more international brand. And, you know, I hate to talk in terms like that, but it's true, right? It's an entertainment property, and it is a brand. And making people aware of all the various licensed parts of that universe makes good sense. And the best place to do it, obviously, is the actual show. In like an ad at the end. I think that would be great. But I do think another good way is to figure out what the fan channels are, like the things that people, because, you know, any type of nerd stuff, there's always fan sites, there's, you know, meta fan sites that talk about everything. Nerds are always talking to each other about the stuff they love. That's what makes them nerds. And so it's you just have to like inject that into the stream. I think people's passion will do the rest.
Fair enough. Now the question, here's the bigger question.
Really cool.
If we didn't have the show, would you have checked out the comics? Or would you even know about the comics?
Meaning our podcast.
I would not
if
have.
We hadn't sure I asked you.
Yeah, yeah.
So wait, if you're asking if the show didn't exist and comics came out?
If we were doing this show right now and had asked you to, like, you know, read the comics and check them out and come on and say what you, like, thought about them, like, would you have even thought about looking for comics? Would you have seeked them out if, like, you knew about them? Did you hear about the comics beforehand, before the show, before we kind of set all this up?
I was unaware. I was aware. I mean, it's kind of stupid that I was unaware because I know there are also a lot of licensed books, and I have one on my shelf that I've been meaning to get to. That's more my own problem of being lazy with. There's like so many types of media that I like, and then I will get into one, and then like kind of at the expense of others for large chunks of time, and then say, oh my god, I haven't read any books recently, and then it will be, you know, video games, or it'll be shows, or it'll be movies, or something like that. So it's, I think to the extent that if I had read, for instance, an article on like a blog that said, hey, the new Doctor Who, there's new Doctor Who comics out, they cover these doctors, and they're quite good, I would definitely be interested, and probably would have called up Alana and been like, hey, where can I get these? Because she's my go-to person for comic knowledge and recommendations, and actually the lending thereof as well.
Indeed.
What about you?
I, for one, would not have. Nope. 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 I would have been. I think I was aware of them because I just know that Doctor Who comics and radio and books have existed for just a very kind of long stretch of time in general. So I wasn't aware of this particular run, but I knew that they existed, but I don't think it would have occurred to me. There are a few other comics that I have been meaning to read that are similarly all also linked to pre-existing television shows. Literally, like, every series I want to read is related to pre-existing television.
But they were higher on my list.
Huh?
Are we talking
Which
about
one?
Buffy?
We're talking about Legend of Korra. Avatar,
oh,
Last
yeah,
Airbender. I read
the
one of them, which I loved.
That,
but then I couldn't find them free on the internet anymore.
Let me know when you find them.
I will.
I
was like, those are free, and I'm like, god damn it. So those...
Comics.
You
can borrow
my
Avatar comics. Yeah.
I really need those. Thank you. Those and Firefly.
Oh, right. Sorry, I guessed the wrong Whedon show.
They got a just ending.
Well, actually, no. It's like
it.
Doctor Who and Beatles albums. There's no wrong answer.
There is no wrong answer. And the one comic book series I loved was a Joss Whedon one, so it makes sense. It wouldn't have occurred to me to go to Doctor Who, especially since it is a currently generating thing in the medium with which I'm familiar with it, but I'm really glad that I did, because like I said, I'm frustrated by the show and I don't feel the same frustration from the comic book.
doctor say? All right. Good to know. I think, you know, that's because it's a debate we've had. Like, we've talked about this sort of stuff on the series, on the show so many times. Of like, how do you market this stuff to people who don't normally read it? And there's all these great tie-ins, and we always kind of sit there and be like, how are you not just even mentioning this to these folks? So very interesting to finally get some feedback from other people who aren't regular comic readers.
Yeah. Thank you guys for joining our scientific experiment on expanding comic fandom.
Anytime. Painless,
yeah.
Cross-media
marketing. Anytime.
Yeah. I mean, I've got this weird rash. That'll go away, though, right?
No, that lasts forever.
Nope, that's forever.
That's your gift from the show?
That's the test if you're allergic to comics.
Got it.
Well, we now have someone else for the Legend of Korra episode that Alana's wanted to do for, like, ever.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, that show is good.
It's got to be about the Legend of Korra comics specifically, okay? But, yeah, let's make that happen. So,
I will
well,
read
thank
anything you,
guys,
you need me to read to prep for that show.
Hey! So thank you. That's exciting. Oh, my God, Legend of Korra. Oh, my God. Avatar, slash, et cetera. I'm sorry, I should have said Avatar comics. The Legend of Korra comics are not out yet, but they are making them. But I have Avatar comics.
They are, right? They're going to be Kurosami comics?
Yes. They'd have to be Kurosami comics since it's canon, right? So
canon. My ship is canon.
Indeed. for folks who have been listening to the Doctor Who episode and now are like, what are they talking about? You should probably go look up Avatar, Legend of Korra, which is nothing at all like Doctor Who. But well, if you guys have any parting thoughts for our listeners, please feel free to share them. Thank you again for coming on the show. I was really, really excited to have you guys both here.
I was excited to be on the show. It was awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, anytime we get to talk about Doctor Who, it's a good day.
So we might have to do a regular one when the next season shows up, whenever that might be.
Ooh.
That would be magical.
Amanda, you and I generally have long discussions when the episodes air anyway, and there are feelings and opinions and capital letters.
Oh, so many feelings.
Why do I see an offshoot happening? A Doctor Who specific show? I have a feeling my wife would like to join on that one because she is rather opinionated when it comes to Moffat, like it sounds like you two are.
Indeed. Well,
yeah, you guys should totally
interesting,
do it.
Yeah. Especially the people who convert are usually the most opinionated because I used to be such a defender. And
oh,
like,
we loved him so much.
Yeah.
He was
now
the chosen one.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I don't have any parting thoughts. I was going to grab my Dalek alarm clock, but my wife has gone to bed and I don't want to wake her up, like picking it up and accidentally setting it off. Because no one likes to be awakened by
exterminate.
That could be disturbing. It's really
disturbing.
You're probably never late for anything. That would get me right out of bed.
Could you imagine, like, waking up, like, blinking, and there's just a big blue Dalek eye stalk in your face?
Oh, my God.
How would you like your eggs?
I can imagine it. That's been a nightmare for the last 10 years of my life.
So we've got two things going on in my place. Is one, one of the local shops has a cardboard standout of a weeping angel. And I have been threatened to not purchase it, like physically threatened not to purchase it and kind of, you know, have it randomly sitting in hallways as doors open. And for the
oh
longest
my God.
Time.
every year, for the last 2 years, we've had our Christmas tree topper has been a weeping angel.
That's great. The other one was I bought the small, like, Mega Block Lego Doctor Who's, and we were hiding Weeping Angel on each other. This went on for like 2 years. And there may be one somewhere in the house or the apartment right now that we kind of forgot where it is.
Well, just don't slink. Don't even
That's terrifying.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll definitely have to do more Who down the road when the season starts, and We'll add in a Legend of Korra or Avatar episode as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I definitely can't keep up with Alana on that. Something I have no idea. So. So before we go, and Bob, is there, do you guys want to plug anything of say, hey, you can find me at or follow me on whatever?
Sure. I'm on the Twitters at Panda Mayor. And for anybody in the Astoria area, my improv team will be playing at QED on Friday night. So come and watch us sing weird songs.
I am at NY Game Lawyer because I am a New York-based game attorney. And, yeah, I guess if you're a game developer and you have legal questions, feel free to drop me a line. I'm terrible at Twitter, but I have been better at checking it and occasionally saying words on it.
Well, thank you both for joining us. It's been a good time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
All righty.
So sign off?
Yes, we're about to sign off. So that was fun. We finally got to talk some Doctor Who, and we found someone to go with you to and do some Avatar discussion down the road. Because I will fail miserably.
Yeah.
So we're back. I think we're gonna be back next week. I don't think I've got anything on the calendar.
No, next week is Jem. Next week is a special Gem.
Okay, we're doing
Gem
next week. All right, we're definitely doing that on the 23rd. All right. Cool.
Yes.
So do you want to announce that one since I just completely screwed it up?
Oh, yeah, no, next week we're going to be talking about fashion and fame, glamour and glitter, Gem. Ooh, it is truly outrageous. Outrageous. Gem is the comic's name. No other comic is the same. Gem is the comic's name. Gem. So my favorite branded property of the late 80s of my childhood is in a comic book series that looks amazing, and we will be having our next podcast about it.
And it will be fun. I think I might have to go back and watch a couple episodes of Gem to remind myself, since that was one I didn't really watch a whole lot growing up that I remember. I think. But it'll be fun.
Well,
I actually look forward
to
the comic. Yes.
Yeah. No, the comic looks fantastic. All lady team and good art. So join us next week, I guess, at the same graphic time, same graphic channel.
I would say I had one about a whole bigger on the inside joke, but I'm totally blanking on what it was to do the outro. So that's fail on my part. So thank you everyone for listening to our Doctor Who, and thank you Amanda and Chris for joining us. Until next time, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
Keep it geeky.